I get about one a year.
Good morning. This is the Education Subcommittee of Ways and Means, and it is Thursday, the, what, 8th of February. Why don't you tell us what we're doing today?
Okay. I'm Chair Monroe, members of the committee. We're going to switch the first two items around because the director of the Board of Pharmacy has to get back to Portland for a board meeting. Other than that, we'll go as the agenda states. The first item you have is a fee ratification for the Board of Pharmacy. As you know, state agency fees are generally either set at a specific level in statute, provided a cap in statute with an allowance for an agency to increase fees up to the cap through administrative rule, or they're allowed to be set in administrative rule without the cap. And the fees that are established in administrative rules must be ratified by the legislature or they'll be rescinded upon adjournment of the next regular session. So that's what we're doing today with these fee ratifications. And the first fee ratification on your agenda is the Board of Pharmacy. The board requests ratification for two fees approved by the Department of Administrative Services and adopted at the board's August 10th, 2017 meeting. There are two new fees for a new licensing category, the dispensing practitioner drug outlet for $100 per outlet annually, and the dispensing practitioner drug outlet delinquent fee for late renewal for $25. This new category applies to registration for healthcare practitioners who have been granted dispensing privileges for their licensing board and engages in drug dispensing from their practice location.
So are there questions? Call up the director of the Board of Pharmacy. Come on up. Introduce yourself and say anything you want to say, and then we'll keep you there to answer any possible questions.
Good morning, Chairs, Co-Chairs Monroe, Smith, Warner, and committee members. My name is Marcus Watt. I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Pharmacy. These fees come about from a process that's over 6 years old to address healthcare practitioners that are basically acting as a retail pharmacy. They are selling medications out of their practice. It does not involve their practice setting itself, but only it applies to drug sourcing, storage, record keeping, safety issues. It does not attach to them as an individual either. It attaches to their setting. It'd be somewhat similar to the difference between a pharmacy practice and a pharmacist practicing and a retail pharmacy. It helps us guarantee the quality and efficacy of the drugs that are being sold in the market. The $100 fee was, we spent 4 years in negotiations with the other healthcare boards trying to craft something that was palatable to everybody. This is the outcome of that effort. Representative Greenlick and Senator Montes Anderson were parts of those discussions. The $100 fee will cover our cost to inspect each of these locations on an annual basis, as well as the licensing. We do not intend to begin assessing the fee for another year. We want to make this a soft start and make sure that all these practitioners are aware and that we're as user-friendly as possible as we implement this. So that's basically why we're here. I'd be happy to answer any questions that you might have.
Appreciate you coming down. Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Thank you for being here. Mr. Watt, about how many locations do you think there are?
That's very difficult to ascertain. In the four-year process, we tried to get an idea of how many there might be. I honestly don't know. I think that it will be not, I would guess 200 to 300 maximum. When we crafted these rules, we made allocations for any practitioner. If you come in and he's going to give you an inhaler, perhaps, it's a 30-day supply, that would not count. Any medication that they give you that's pursuant to a procedure or anything else does not apply. So it's only actually engaging in the retail practice. So if a nurse practitioner or a physician were having you come back monthly for your blood pressure medication, that would apply. You're coming in and getting some medication prior to your examination or subsequent to something, an antibiotic or something for a short term, that would not apply. We also have a, I'm sorry, there's one more thing. We also have a, in our rules, an opportunity that if another board wishes to inspect these outlets to the same level we are for those specific four things we're looking at, that we would then waive the licensing requirement. The veterinary board is exploring that with us right now. So they have their own inspector and would be able to go and do that and not be required to license with us.
Just brief follow-up. Thank you. So, okay, that helps a little bit. I mostly was curious because you said the goal is to have them able to be inspected once a year, I think you said.
Yes, we inspect all of our retail pharmacies annually.
Okay. So then if you're not quite sure on what the total number is going to be, that could end up in the future potentially having an impact on your inspector caseload?
Yes, it could.
Okay.
We don't anticipate it. The $100 was—it's kind of throwing a dart at the wall. But we went as conservatively as we could, while still allowing us a little leeway there.
Okay.
And we'll get a little better sense of that. Like I said, we're not going to charge the fee for the first year. Idaho has some experience with this with their physicians. Typically, those are very short, very easy inspections, so we anticipate the same here. We're also going to break with our tradition. Our pharmacy inspections are unannounced. We will be announcing 2 to 3 days in advance to these practitioners, so they will know we're coming, and they'll be able to have everything we need available, so it'll be as painless as possible to them.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Additional questions? Representative Lively.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So this is brand new. You haven't charged this before.
Nope.
The fee, and it talks about annual, and so, and then it talks about this delinquent, the $25 if it's a late renewal, and I'm just trying to understand. So, the dates in which they have to renew, is that consistent, or will it be based? So I'm trying to understand what the risk is that somebody wouldn't renew or pay the $100, because that's what this is suggesting. If they somehow miss that date, they're going to pay $25.
Yeah, if they forgot, they did not pay and came in later, there would be a $25 delinquent fee. We do send out notices in advance, both by mail and email, so we have very few of those with our other licensees. We don't anticipate a difference.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Anything additional? Okay. Madam Co-Chair, a motion.
Okay. Mr. Co-Chair, I move that we include the fees adopted by the Board of Pharmacy for dispensing practitioner drug outlet program in a fee ratification bill.
Okay. Heard the motion. Discussion on the motion. Any objections to the motion? Okay. Senator Thompson objects and Representative Parrish objects. Any others? It was adopted. Thank you very much.
I'd also like to thank you for your courtesy and allowing me to go first. That's very much appreciated.
That's okay. Have a good meeting with your board. Mr. Wilson.
Mr. Chair, members, the next item is from the Higher Education Coordinating Commission, a retroactive grant approval, a Troop to Teachers federal grant request. There is someone from the agency here. Just to note that this is a retroactive grant, but they did meet the 10-day notification requirements. I'll let the agency representative explain the grant.
Okay, come on up.
Good morning, Co-Chair Monroe, Co-Chair Smith Warner, and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Donna Llewellyn, and I'm the Deputy Director for the Office of Community Colleges and Workforce Development, located at the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. I appreciate the opportunity to provide you brief information regarding the application for the Troops to Teachers grant, which is made available through the U.S. Department of Defense. The Troops to Teachers grant does not require cost sharing and is a competitive grant opportunity which is open to state education agencies. On January 26th, the HEC applied for a total of $1,548,676 in federal funds that will support activities to create pathways to post-secondary opportunities for our military service members. These activities include creating a military training to college credit crosswalk for the top 5 enrolled CTE programs at each of Oregon's 17 community colleges. It will also create a website where veterans can access information related to academic credits awarded for military training, training, teacher pathway information, state job opportunities, and will create a comprehensive communication plan for disseminating website information to veterans. These activities will be carried out via a close partnership between the Higher Education Coordinating Commission and Clackamas Community College, who will assist us in managing the activities I mentioned previously. Thank you for your consideration of the retroactive approval of this grant application, and I'd be happy to answer any questions the committee may have.
Questions? Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. What is the, so the state of Oregon is not putting any into this? There's no match requirement?
There is not a match requirement, Representative.
Do you have the position descriptions defined yet for the people you're going to have do this?
We have, Representative Wisnett, co-chairs, we do have tentative job descriptions developed, yes.
Follow up, Mr.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry, Mr. Co-Chair. Does the grant require you to make a report back on effectiveness or how successful you were to the federal government?
Co-chairs and Representative Wisnett, yes, there are reporting requirements associated with the grant.
Follow up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Go ahead.
Is there some way in approval of this grant that we can say we want a copy of that provided to the appropriate legislative subcommittees?
Certainly, absolutely.
And follow up again, Mr.
Go
Co-Chair.
Ahead.
And I would appreciate whoever you hire to do this to work with the teacher's practice and whatever it is. And be sure that I passed a bill a couple of sessions back that asked all the agencies to try to expedite licensing of veterans using their credits and things like this. So if that position description could also be amended to be sure that they check with that to see what kind of effectiveness we have, how many troops to actually get a license to teach in Oregon, would be very helpful. Thank you.
Okay. Representative Parrish.
Well, thank you. I'm going to support you going and looking at this grant, but I do want to put on the record, we have one of the worst participation rates in this program in the nation, and it's because of our teaching requirements. So if you are somebody exiting the military and you go into a state that does not require the fifth year, but you have your bachelor's, the Troops to Teacher program works wonderfully. In our state, there is a huge hurdle for people who've already incurred a bachelor's degree and that cost to come to a state like Oregon, where we have the fifth year teaching requirement, which frankly does not actually offer better educational outcomes if you compare us to states that do not have that requirement, and then look at graduation rates and other educational outcomes, Florida and Texas and things like that, where they have very high participation in this program. I know a lot of veterans who have looked into this, who've done the research, and then walk away from this program. So if we're just pulling down grant money for the sake of getting money, but we are actually not doing anything to create a pathway that fast tracks people's experience teaching in the military, I mean, I'll just put out there, you know, my husband taught at Southern Oregon University and taught at OIT and cannot use the Troops to Teachers program. So if we're just pulling this money down for the sake of getting it and we're not actually creating a complete fast pathway for people to not have to go back and get a fifth year of teaching and to be able to translate that military experience, then this is a waste of effort. But I will support it if our intention is to move people forward quickly.
Okay, go ahead and respond.
Co-Chair Representative Parrish, it is our intention to leverage as much as we can things like credit for prior learning, credit for military experience, all of those types of things to be able to accelerate credit completion and working with our partners at TSPC for these pathways.
Can I just follow up? So we had a bill some years ago, and we might be talking about different bills, because it came out of the Veterans Committee, mm-hmm. and I want to say it maybe was 12 or 13. I'd have to go back and double check. But we did a path, and it got totally amended because the teachers union came in and said, no, we don't want this. But we were completely prepared to give reciprocity for licensure without having to go through and do that fifth year, and it got killed in this building. So again, I'm just going to very much stress, I'm looking forward to seeing what you guys do with this money, but if we don't have a path that actually looks at true reciprocity for people who've been teaching, and particularly also their spouses, We have spouses who come to this state. They've been teaching. My sister-in-law teaches, has taught for 10 years in Texas and can't come here. And my brother was as an Army veteran, can't come to this state and get immediate reciprocity. That is a problem. And so we have families who won't move back to Oregon, who are from Oregon, because of our license laws.
Okay.
Thank you.
Anything else? Senator Roblin, you want to
No, I'm good. In? I'm comfortable about the bill.
Madam Co-Chair?
Oh.
Motion?
Sorry. Yes, Mr. Co-Chair, I recommend a retroactive approval of a federal grant request to the U.S. Department of Defense in the amount of $1,548,676 for a Troops to Teachers grant.
Discussion on the motion? Any objections to the motion? The business will carry. I guess we need somebody to carry the Board of Pharmacy. Is there a volunteer?
Actually, Mr. Chair, there is not a requirement, or that will not be going to full,
okay,
except as a complete bill.
So we don't need anybody to carry the Board of Pharmacy. Okay. All right. Thank you very much. Okay. Musical chairs.
Thank you, Co-Chairs, members of the committee. The next item on your agenda is the fee ratification for the Board of Psychology. The Board of Psychology requests fee ratifications for its renewal, licensing renewal fees, its delinquent fee, application fee, jurisprudence exam, and limited permit. As noted in the analysis, most of these fees have remained flat since 2010 or 2000. And one of the consequences of increased mental health awareness and increased usage of mental health provider is that the board has seen the number of investigations conducted by the board increase an average of 9.7% annually. And these fees are an attempt to address the increasing investigations and attorney costs for the board. And the director is here if you have any questions.
Okay. Director, want to come on up? Introduce yourself and make any comments you wish, and then we'll see if there are questions.
Good morning, Chair and Board Committee members. My name is Charles Hill. I'm the Executive Director for the Board of Psychology and also the Counselors and Therapists Board. This increase is necessary, as LFO staff pointed out, because of the increase of contested case hearings and the increase of DOJ and administrative hearing costs. We're seeing a large increase, and every year we experience more costs, so that's why this fee is necessary.
Okay, are there questions? Have you got the fees in front of you? I do. Represent Parrish.
Thank you. How does DOJ bill you for services? Do you just pay a pro rata share of your budget to them, or do you pay them as you have cases?
Representative Parrish and members of the committee, we pay a flat fee annually. It's billed quarterly to our program. The DOJ has a formula that they use based on past years. So because of the past years, we keep increasing in our number of contested cases and the cost, so consequently the cost of going up.
Additional? Okay, I'm looking at the chart here, and fees like active status, $750, going up by $30 to $780, and so on down the line. Most of the fee increases are from $5 to $20. Okay, anything additional on this? Representative Fernandez.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. Just, I'm new. This looks like, the increases are 4%, 5%, 8%, 3%, and I think it would be helpful for me to understand that in context of what is the usual increase. Is it, do we typically see that percentage increase from every other year?
Representative Hernandez, I'm not sure I understand your question. Are you talking about the percentage increase from the DOJ annually, or?
I'm talking about the fees. I'm sorry, the $750 going up $30 is a 4% change.
Mm-hmm.
where, I'm just trying to find the logic behind the 4%, if you will.
Oh, okay. Still not understanding your question.
Is it a number you use? Is it current service level? Like, where's the 4% coming from?
Yeah.
Representative Hernandez, members of the committee, we knew the amount that we needed to fit the budget for the next biennium.
We need your name on the record.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Laurie Felton, Mental Health Regulatory Agency. We tried to distribute the costs across the different fee types pretty evenly here, and taking into consideration how long it's been since the fees increased. There's no standard amount that we increase every year or anything like that.
Thank you. That's helpful.
Okay. Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. My understanding is that, as you said, it is often related to caseload, because these are all you pay for your inspectors with these fees. So my understanding has been, in addition to percentage, it's more a trying to project out what your caseloads are and how much you're going to need to cover the cost of those inspectors to follow those. Is that accurate, or is that part of the fee setting as well?
Co-Chair Smith Warner, we knew the amount that we would need for the next biennium, and this was based on how many renewals we knew we would have. We had a whole spreadsheet built to figure out how we could spread them across and get the amount we needed to meet the needs for the next biennium.
Great. And I, Co-Chair Smith Warner, and members of the committee, I would also add that the Board of Psychology, does not have the ability to assess costs in contested case hearings. In other words, when we go to a contested case and it runs up to $60,000 or $80,000 and we prevail, we can't assess costs. We had a bill in front of the legislature last session, but it failed.
Okay. Senator Thompson?
I just have a general question, because you haven't raised your fees some since 2010. And it says some as far back as 2000.
Delinquency fees, yeah.
So are you budgeting this for the next 7 years, or is this going to get you through the biennium? I mean, it seems like most agencies don't look at like cost of living or raise by the 2% or 2.5% each year, and you kind of have, you don't want to come back in front of us asking for money for the next 7 years because it's such a pain. But how do you make, will these get you through for the next 4, 5, 6 years? Or, because it seems like that's what a lot of agencies do.
Senator Thompson, members of the committee, we certainly try to do that. However, there's some costs that are beyond our control as well. DAS assessment costs are beyond our control. And so we do try to set that out for the next 4 years or so. But, you know, again, we don't have control over a lot of the costs that come our way.
Thanks.
Okay. Additional questions? Okay, once again, we're looking at fee increases that have not been up since 2010 and delinquency fees that have not been raised since 2000. Madam Co-Chair, motion?
Mr. Chair, I move that we include the fees adopted by the Board of Psychology in a fee ratification bill.
LFO, what's your take on this?
That is our recommendation, to include these fees in the ratification bill.
Okay. Heard the motion. Is there any objections to the motion? Representative Parrish is objecting. She must have eaten something for breakfast that didn't.
I'd be happy to explain. I mean, I asked the question, and with all due respect, I mean, I asked the question about DOJ billing. You know, the reality is that the cost of DOJ attorneys goes up when we don't do things to address the cost of the employees at the DOJ, which is an increased purse cost and an increased cost for the public employee health care side. So those costs are being pushed onto agencies that are fee-based. And this particular group of folks, when you look at, you know, some of the folks who are in the license type, are some of our providers who might not be able to afford an increased fee. And so for those reasons, until we get a hold of the cost side of the ledger, I am not interested in the raising revenue side of the ledger, and for that reason I'm objecting.
Okay. Anything further? And I'm not interested in pushing this off on the general fund. Madam Co-Chair, did we get a motion?
Yes.
Okay, the motion is to approve the fees. LFO recommends approving the fees Representative Parrish objects. Anybody else object? Motion carried. We don't need a carrier for this either.
Right, no.
Okay, so what's next?
So the next item on your agenda is the Board of Licensed Professional and Counselors Therapist fee ratification. This board has two new fees, and they're just an inactive license fee for $100 and the reactivation of an inactive license fee for $125. This change came about because the board wanted to gain a better way to inform the public about the licensing structure. This inactive status replaced what the board currently does, which is to grant a licensee a continuing education waiver because they're not practicing for an extended period of time. So now they're just going to call that an inactive license and charge that fee.
Okay. Questions of staff? Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So how does the reactivation fee compare to just the either renewal or the regular licensing fee? My assumption is that this is kind of a discounted, you pay a little bit less to go on inactive, and then you pay to go back on, and I'm assuming it's some sort, it's some degree less than if you had just went off and then went back on or reactive.
Yes, I'm Representative Swift-Warner, Larry Felton, Mental Health Regulatory Agency. It is, the normal active renewal fee is $175, so this is a reduced annual renewal fee of $100. And the fee to reactivate is just, you know, the documentation that they have to submit and the work we have to do to switch them back to an active status license.
Okay. Great, thank you.
Mm-hmm. Questions, Representative Wisnik.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I've recently had a lot of some constituents questioning about professional counselors as far as marriage counselors, da-da-da. Is there an increase in the number of people that are licensed? Is there a or is it decreasing? And do you have a lot of legal actions against people who are identifying themselves as professional counselors are not licensed? Or how can you comment on this profession as far as, you know, fraud, people that are not licensed, and the number of complaints you're receiving or questions? Thank you.
I'd be happy to try and answer that, Representative Winsett and members of the committee. And we're seeing an increase in applications of about 13% to 15% per year for licensed counselors and therapists. So with our contested cases and complaints, we're seeing a correlation increase accordingly. And we also have this unique situation with unlicensed practice where we don't have authority necessarily to go after the unlicensed practitioners.
Follow up, Mr. Co-Chair.
Go ahead, please.
I'm trying to help my constituent. I'm looking at this and hearing your comments. Do you do any public service announcements to be sure that, you know, say people be sure your counselors are, you're getting licensed or certified or trained? Do you have a service, you know, advertising? Do any? Are you working on that? Or
I would say no, not strongly.
Follow up real quick.
Go ahead.
Do you work with the Attorney General or see if they have could help you or do something like that? Do you know what kind of activity they're having in these unlicensed people and people making complaints to the Attorney General?
Yeah, I'm not sure I can answer that.
Huh? I'm Representative Wisnett. We haven't really done a strong campaign like that. I mean, we have materials available on our website, but we also have to be concerned about restraint of trade and different things. If you don't have to have a license, if you're exempt, under our, there's an exemption where if you don't have the education to get licensed, then the board can't do anything about your unlicensed practice. So we attempted to address that last session as well, and it failed.
Thank you very much for your response. Thank you, Ms. Coach.
So this is a new fee, Senator Roblin?
So we don't have any requirement that a person can claim to be a therapist or a licensed person if they don't have a license.
Senator Roblin, they are restricted from using the title licensed professional counselor or licensed marriage and family therapist, but they can say I'm a professional counselor or I'm a marriage and family therapist, and there's no consequence
license
for that.
Okay.
They can't use the word license.
So the red line or the thing that should point out is if they don't put license in front of their deal, they probably are not.
Correct. And as somebody who had a high school education would be able to you know, get around through the loophole in the exemption. Somebody who had a master's degree that would qualify them for licensure would not be able to practice without a license.
That's okay. So that.
That makes a lot of sense. That's a lot of nonsense.
Just wanted to make sure. Well, that's something we have to decide.
The incentive, to pay this fee and be licensed is that they can then get compensated by insurance companies. Mm-hmm. And generally speaking, insurance companies will not compensate if they are not licensed. So you know, otherwise you would think, well, why would anybody get licensed? Well, if they want to collect from insurance companies, they have to be licensed. And if they're licensed, they pay the license fee of $125. If they want to go unlicensed for a time, they can go on inactive status for $100, and then they can license again and go back to the $125.
But I think,
Madam Co-Chair,
Senator Rowland,
clear from what they said. If they go in an active status, they can't participate. They can't practice because once you have the degree, once you have actually got the education and met the requirement, you cannot practice without a license. And you have punishments that would be in place if someone chose to do that?
Senator Robley, members of the committee, once you're on inactive status, it's basically a non-practicing status. You still are licensed by the board. It's usually for people who are just not practicing because of, you know, sickness or pregnancy or something, or if they've left the state and they plan to come back to Oregon, it's sort of a placeholder on their file so they can reactivate when they're ready to practice.
Go ahead.
So if a person had gone to college, got their bachelor's degree and whatever, and decided to put up a shingle and not say license because they aren't, is that a violation?
If they have a professional counselor?
If they just say that they're a family practitioner, they don't say they're licensed because they aren't, even though they have the educational background, is there any problem with that?
If they do have the education, they can't treat or diagnose or assess mental health disorders without a license.
Okay.
If they don't have the education, then the board has no control over them doing that.
Okay. Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So I am a little more knowledgeable about this because I have a very good friend who just went through a three-year master's program to become a licensed counselor, and so I have heard a lot about this. It is a very rigorous program in the first place. It's a full 3-year program, and then once you graduate with that degree, you have to practice, or you have to do 1,700 hours, I believe. Is that accurate? 2,400 hours. So you've done a full 3-year master's program where almost all of your work in that has been straight up counseling, and then you have to practice for 2,400 hours even though you don't yet have a license, and so therefore you can't get reimbursed by insurance. So it is rather challenging to be able to provide that. Now, she also points out that someone who, say, has a master's in social work can be a licensed MSW and provide counseling services in some way and not have to follow any of, and not have to go through that whole certification. You can work, because people will come to a social worker as a counselor, even if they don't advertise licensed counselor, because that's not what they are, but they are an MSW or a licensed MSW and can do counseling that way. So it's very, I'm like, how do you get those 24 hours if you can't be licensed until you get them and you can't get, and well, she's working on a number of things, but it's an extremely valuable license that I believe is really underestimated, that people don't realize quite how high the bar is of both your mm-hmm. educational background and your experience background in order to do that. So I can say, if you are going to a licensed counselor in the state of Oregon, you are getting somebody who is extremely educated and experienced.
As a social worker.
And this again is a new fee, right? Never, so that's why it's not an increase or anything. It's never been enacted before. And the fee revenue that you expect to get is used primarily for what? Investigating or?
Well, total administration costs with our staff. It would also play into investigating as well.
And would this fee be necessary to keep your other activities from kind of bleeding over and paying these costs? I mean, is it an equalization kind of effort?
Senator Monroe, members of the committee, that's what our attempt is, yes.
Yeah, that was my understanding. Additional questions or comments? Madam Co-Chair?
Mr. Chair, I move that we include the fees adopted by the Board of Licensed Professional Counselors and Therapists in a fee ratification bill.
Okay. Discussion. Further discussion. Objections? Representative Parrish? Okay. Motion carried. And again, we don't need anybody, Kim. It's going to go into the omnibus bill at the end.
Thank you, chairs and members of the committee.
Thank you.
Thank you very much for coming. Which one are we on now, John?
Occupation therapy.
OTL.
Do we have a bill number that this is all getting rolled up into?
I don't think there is. It's the letter.
I know that on the last two.
Exactly.
Just okay, occupational therapy licensing board. Why don't you introduce it for us?
They must have a
Yeah, it'll be a vehicle.
Yes, sir. Chairman Rowe, members of the committee, the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board is here to request the ratification of fees that were established administratively during the interim for fingerprint background checks. The board is requesting ratification of fees that were established. The fingerprint background check fee is $40 and will be passed through entirely to Oregon State Police. The board will utilize fingerprint background checks for all new applicants, which is roughly around 350 per year, approximately 70% of which come from out of state. The board will continue to incorporate the lead system checks for all licensed renewals.
And do we have somebody here from the board that would like to come forward, please? Welcome, put your name on the record and say anything you want to say.
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee, good morning. I'm Nancy Schuberg, the director of the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board. The OT board has approved to initiate fingerprint background checks on our new applicants for licensure, reinstatement of licensure, and limited permits. The applicant pays $12.50 directly to the fingerprinting vendor, and $40 is added to the application fee to the board. The $40 charge is passed through entirely to the Oregon State Police. We will absorb the administrative costs. The board will continue its current practice of completing LEDS checks on 100% of all renewal applicants. This is the third biennium that we have done this, and we will continue to do so. The board felt this was necessary in the interest of public health. We have about 70% of our applicants apply from out of state. We ask that you ratify the fingerprint background check for the OT board today. Thank you.
Okay. So make this very clear. This increase of $40 is only for the fingerprinting and is all passed on to the Oregon State Police who do the fingerprinting.
Except for administrative.
And they're eating the administrative costs.
Yeah, they're eating.
Mm-hmm. That's what she said.
Oh, I thought they were.
Okay.
Except.
Are there questions? Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. So you were not doing this in the past? You were not requiring the background check or the fingerprinting of?
Not fingerprint, which are the national checks. We have been doing the state LEDS checks on all renewals for the last three bienniums.
So follow up, Mr. Co-Chair. So is this in response, which I think is necessary based upon the Olympic situation with the doctor that was doing, the occupational therapy could be doing some things like he was doing. Your members are in their occupational therapy, do they do massaging and things like that for?
Co-Chair Smith-Warner, Co-Chair Monroe, Representative Wisnett, thank you for your question. I'm not quite aware of what you're referring to.
The Olympic scandal with the doctor that was molesting and abusing.
Nasser was his name.
This was a occupational therapist. I'm not aware.
He was a doctor, but he was doing rehab on the Olympics. That's okay. I just thought that was maybe what brought this on. So
I think a bill brought this up.
Yeah.
Didn't we require this legislatively?
Yes, a few years back.
As far as the history of the Occupational Therapy Board, we're one of the last health boards to implement this requirement, and we just feel that the time is right, and we have up to 2,800 plus licensees now, and as I said, 70% are coming in state, so these national background checks will be able to check these people coming in.
Yeah, and this requirement happened before the scandal with the doctor.
Thank you, sir.
Madam Co-Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. So I'm going to throw this out here to you. This is something I'm going to work on more in the interim, and I'm not singling out you guys. But I was just trying to think through what made the most sense, because according to this, only new applicants will do the fingerprint.
Correct.
And renewals will just keep doing the NICS, which means there'll be a point where they'll, I mean, I guess over time you'll have everybody's fingerprints if that's part of the goal. But I was contemplating whether across the boards generally we should kind of recheck in with DAS on how folks are doing it to see if we want to include fingerprints in renewals until we get 90% or more coverage. If we're doing it, and you know, if this is what we're going to, and if legislatively this is what we've asked the boards to do, it seems to make sense to me, rather than just the new applicants, if the concern is the overall licensing, we might as well figure out a way to add that into the renewals as well. So just kind of a heads up, or did you guys talk about that at all when you were figuring out how to best implement this?
Co-Chair Smith Warner, it has not come up with the board. It can be done. There's just a cost to it, $40 to every licensee, plus
clearly
the $12.50,
right,
and we would have to recoup the cost of renewal fee and manually follow through. For the OT board, we have 2,800 licensees, 1.5 FTE, so we would have to bring in administrative help to review the FBI checks, and we'd have to track who's done it and who hasn't, and any resulting discipline. And there'd be probably some pushback by the licensees and the association. With the LEDS checks, the assumption is if there was a crime committed, it would be likely within the state, and the LEDS would catch it. So the board would have to weigh how many licensees we'd actually catch versus the costs incurred. The OT board has low discipline relative to other boards. I personally reviewed the LEDS checks results on 2,800 licensees last month and found only one unreported arrest. It was a dismissed charge for trespassing. So, but it is something we can look at going forward.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, we've discussed this before, and it does seem a little unusual that if a person has been practicing regularly and they're just renewing, they don't have to be printed unless they do something wrong, whereas anybody new coming in from another state or a new applicant, they have to be fingerprinted and pay the extra $40.
So let's,
Senator Roebling.
Yeah, thank you. When they do the state LEDS deal, do they have to be fingerprinted for that too?
Co-Chair Smith Warner, Senator Roebling, I'm sorry, I didn't hear your question.
So if you are having a LEDS check, is that a fingerprint-based check as well?
No, it is not. It's run by a DMV, and there's a couple other checks. I don't know on top of my head, but it is
right.
State.
Yeah. Okay.
Social thanks. Security, public draw from your Social Security number.
Okay. Any additional questions for Ms. Schubert?
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move that the committee grant an increase in services and supplies limitation of $24,000 for the remaining. Oh, whoops, I'm reading off the wrong thing. I'm sorry. Mr. Chair, I correct my motion and move that we include the fees adopted by the Occupational Therapy Licensing Board for the fingerprint background check in a fee ratification bill.
Okay. Discussion of the motion. Any objections to the motion? Motion carried. Okay, John, where are we now?
Thank you.
Next, we'll go to the Oregon Mortuary and Cemetery Board's report on information technology needs. So the Oregon Mortuary and Cemetery Board is here to requests acknowledgement of the receipt of a report on the assessment of the Health-Related Licensing Board's information technology needs and requirements. The Mortuary Board is one of the six health-related licensing boards that this committee reviews their budget. And in 2017, their budget bill, Senate Bill 5523, had a budget note requiring this report. The background behind this is that these six boards and a few other small boards and commissions in the state have used a single IT vendor for, you'll have to correct me, but I believe it's at least over a decade. This vendor recently informed these boards that they anticipated ending support at the end of this current biennium. So for 1921, we need to come up with a plan on what these boards would do. And that's the nature behind the budget note. A little caveat in that is that the vendor recently informed these boards that they would be ceasing a majority of the IT support as early as June of this year. So we're kind of being forced to fast track this a little bit. And so we have the Mortuary Board reporting on behalf of this whole group of boards today.
Wonderful. Identify yourself and give us your pitch.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Michelle Sigmund Gaines. I am the former executive director for the Oregon Mortuary and Cemetery Board. I am now the executive director for the Physical Therapist Licensing Board. Recent enough transition, and I have been the project lead on the IT transition. So I got the honor of presenting this item to you today. The John has stolen, I think, the key points to the presentation, but I'll give just a little bit more detail on that. The budget note, as John had said, we did not expect to have to actually make any changes in this current biennium budget. We did anticipate that it was coming up in 1921. We didn't have a sense of exactly when the timing would be, and I think that was the origin of the original budget note. As John had noted, the timelines have moved up with the vendor needing to, in essence, move on to other activities sooner than we were anticipating. And I'll go through sort of the different elements of that in the presentation that I'll be referencing. As John said, the six boards that make up the health-related licensing boards in the agency also partner with the physical therapist licensing board on a common IT infrastructure that's been provisioned by a single vendor for over a decade, and that has covered everything from the network layer to the licensing databases that are maintained, to the desktops and the servers on the back end. All of that has been provisioned locally in the offices of the health boards. What we began when we knew that this was coming up, we began in the end of 2016, early 2017, working with DAS in the CIO office to begin looking at the IT assets and the best way to begin the migration in this current biennium. We began with the network services, firewall, VPN connectivity, and we did actually migrate those to the DAS ETS services, in part because of the movement toward centralizing IT security for the state as a whole. That became complete in mid-2017. And we were able to, with some offsets of what our costs were, we were able to absorb that within the existing biennium limitation through that offset by not having to pay the anticipated costs on that. We then began a process of exploring the end user or the desktop support, the hands-on printers, computers, elements that are that the staff use. And we have been in the process of developing an RFP process in partnership with DAS and the CIO's office that would address ideally a portfolio or a menu of providers that could serve not just our boards but the other small boards and commissions in the state of Oregon, about 20 of whom I think also use the same vendor and are in a similar situation that we are in. That process is ongoing. We are currently working with DAS and with DOJ to evaluate a master agreement with one provider that would be through an intergovernmental agreement. They currently work with the educational service districts and providing support to small charters and small districts throughout the state, predominantly in the I-5 corridor. And so they have staff and expertise available for similarly sized organizations and activities such as licensing and other things. We're still probably a month or two out before we have specific cost and availability information on that. And that's part of why we don't have a sense of whether or not there would be an impact within this biennium and any potential for needing to ask for more limitation. We are also looking at the servers, which we do all provision locally. We're looking at whether or not the same providers that would provide the consulting on-site to us for the end-user desktop support could also provide the server care and feeding. We are also looking at whether it would make sense to move all or part of those to the data center here in Salem. We're gathering the costs and the different elements. It may need to be a little bit of both. Some of the databases that we have are very throughput intensive, and so there is an impact with having those in Salem when the desktops are in use. So we're trying to balance all of that. That may also, now that our timelines have moved up to, on that particular portion of it, the vendor is looking to need to cease support of us at the end of this June 2018, about a year earlier than we were initially anticipating. So we have stepped up the process of identifying what those costs are. We had anticipated that those would be in 1921, but those will now hit this biennium as well. The last piece of it is, of course, the licensing database. This is the one quadrant of our IT infrastructure where there is a longer timeline. The vendor who had actually initially developed the system probably in the mid-1990s for these boards has committed contractually to continue providing support for that homegrown system, if you will, until such time as the boards can move to another product. We are still, though, looking at what other boards are using and looking at seeking an RFP for doing that replacement through this biennium. That will definitely not be replaced in this biennium, but it will definitely be part of the 1921 biennium budget ask. So I'm happy to address any questions on our progress to date. What we are hoping to do is to come back to you at the next opportunity, at which point we anticipate having specific numbers, and any ask we would have for additional limitation would happen at that time.
Okay. Questions? Representative Wisnett.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. How long was the current contract you have with the vendor that's exiting, or how long has that contract been in place?
Co-Chair, Representative Wisnett, the contract that we've had has been most recently renewed at the beginning of this last biennium, as I recall.
How long have you had the same company?
We've had the same company for just a little bit more than a decade.
Well, thank you. Mr.
Additional?
Yes, sir. Thank you. Well, it's a comment to the committee. We're not really, it's not the responsibility of this committee, but I do not understand an IT contract for 20 years with the same company about, you know, they're renewing it, they're not competing it. Mm. I mean, we need this. Joint Audits, Legislative Audits Committee met yesterday, and we're talking about this contracting, the problem, HEX having some problems with their contracting and everything. But I wish DAS would take over all contracting and not have agencies like this doing contracting. I've had previous experiences in this body with LC contracting out, printing our laws to a company outside of Oregon, and just keep renewing that contract without competing it. IT technology prices should come down. You're probably paying X number every year. You renew it, you're probably adding 10% or whatever to that. No, is it going down?
Representative Wisnett, it has.
Mr. Coacher, I apologize, but
go ahead.
The one it, the contracts have been, there have been multiple contracts. We have been working with DAS each time a new contract is issued. It's only been for about the 10 years. This particular vendor has not raised prices. We do absolutely understand the concern, particularly with skill sets like technology. And that's why we are working with DAS, that for the next round, we're looking at setting up a way to allow multiple companies to bid and be pre-qualified on sort of that menu system. Absolutely.
Thank you for those comments. And Mr. Co-Chair, that's my desire. I think contracting is, you know, you can get really good and get really bad. And that's, but in technology and things like that, I think it needs to be looked at. And it sounds like they're trying to do, get the best for the taxpayers, but I think it could even, should be competed as every 3 years or whatever. And look, thank you.
John, what's your recommendation?
Chairman Rowe, members of the committee, the Legislative Fiscal Office recommends acknowledging receipt of the report with the understanding that the Mortuary and Cemetery Board, on behalf of the health-related licensing boards, will return to the next convening of the Emergency Board to report on continued progress, including any request for additional resources.
Okay. Is that acceptable to you?
Absolutely. Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Chair, I move we accept the Legislative Fiscal Office recommendation on this board, on this report.
Discussion of the motion? Any objections? We don't, do we need a carrier for that?
Yes, I do.
We do need a carrier for that.
Carry.
You want to carry it?
Sure.
Okay. Madam Co-Chair will carry. Okay, where are we now? Got one left?
Correct.
Speech language pathology.
Chairman Rowe, members of the committee, the Board of Speech, Language, Pathology, and Audiology is here to request that you acknowledge receipt of a report on the board's complaint and investigation processes and workload. The background behind this report is that the, again, the budget bill for the health-related licensing boards, of which this is a part, Senate Bill 5523 in 2017, instructed the board to report on this. Some background, the board has had continued growth in licensees for a number of years and investigations as well. In the 2015 session, the legislature approved a limited duration investigator position. There was a change of director with a current director now in place. She decided not to fill that position when she took over, just to have a more thorough review of the investigative process and what was happening. So she used a contract investigator at a lower cost. The continuation of that contract investigator doesn't appear to be feasible with the way that number of investigations are growing and becoming more complex. So we weren't ready to make a decision when the budget bill was passed, and we asked that the board return in this session to hear more about the investigative process.
Okay, who's up?
Thank you, Co-Chair Monroe and Co-Chair Senate Smith-Werner and members of the committee. My name's Erin Haig, and I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Examiners for Speech, Language, Pathology, and Audiology. I'm also doing the Interim Executive Director for the Oregon Mortuary and Cemetery Board, because we're all in the group of six agencies that are part of the 833 group that presents to you. And so I am here today to make my report regarding the note and requesting that that limitation for a part-time investigator be re-added. I admit that I was new in the position and fiscally cautious, let's say, wanting to review what the investigatory load was. Also in 2015, that was the year that I started. It's been just about 3 years exactly. We did implement in 2015 the fingerprint background checks. So if you look at our overall cases for 2017, about a third of them were hits that we got on new license applicants. So each one of those has to be opened up as a case and reviewed by the board. Usually the license goes forward, because in Oregon we have to have a nexus between the criminal activity and the license activity. So generally speaking, we do have to go through and do our due diligence on that, but usually they're licensed. About a third of the cases this last year were from our speech-language pathology assistant audit. That is a KPM. We feel that that's a very important audit that we do. The assistants, as with some of the other discussions you were having earlier, they have a high school education. They have to have 90 college credits and 100 hours of work experience versus the actual speech-language pathologist, who is the clinician of record for all of the patients or students. They have a master's, plus they do a clinical fellowship of 1,260 hours postgraduate. And after they have done that year, plus one additional year, they're eligible to supervise assistants. But because the assistant, all of the rules came into effect for assistants in 2009, and we've made some, you know, updates to those rules, but because of the growth of the profession, originally partly was in school districts years ago, and there's still confusion at the school level with the roles and responsibilities of who's handling, you know, speech-language pathology and who's helping those kids with their IEPs. So it gets rather complicated. And also our board has two separate professions that we regulate, audiology and speech-language pathology. Plus we now have the certificates for the assistants. So all of that has added to our caseload. So they've become more complex. We've had cases that involve speaking valves on people who have tracheotomies. We have swallowing issues with babies, with adults who've had strokes. It's all over the board. We're regulating both in the healthcare environment, hospitals, clinics, as well as the schools environment. In 2011, the legislature made it clear that our board, which was enacted in 1973, is the board that regulates speech-language pathology in the schools as well. And then that was again reemphasized in 2015. When the board eliminated the exemption for TSBC licensure. And so now all new licensees who work in schools in any setting or any kind of setting in the state of Oregon must have the board's license. So all of this has kind of added to the complexity. We know that typically, I've talked in the nursing board and some of the other boards, and nursing, for example, has about 12 or 14 investigators, each holding a caseload of about 40 at any given time. So there's also the importance of me as the, you know, we're a two-person agency. I'm the one writing the discipline. Yes, I run it all by the AG, but I'm doing the orders and the notices. So I think it's important that there's a separation between the investigative staff, which is me, and the person who's handling that. So for all of these reasons, and because we're very similar to all of the other boards, which do have at least part-time investigator, that that's why we've come before you today to again ask for that position. And I will be asking for that limitation to be put back in to the 1921 budget. So also, as with the other boards, our attorney general fees have, our legal fees have increased. We are on the flat fee. We stayed on the flat fee because we're trying to be conservative. And 3 or 4 years ago, we had a huge bill from a very large contested case that ran up to $50,000. Unlike other boards, we can charge that licensee. However, she's appealing. She's now living in Redding, California. I highly doubt we're ever going to get those funds. And so we've been trying sort of not to use our attorney as much in order to try to keep that rolling three-year average down so that maybe perhaps next year it'll go down. But it did go up. We did not get that notification until after the session ended. So we had no idea. We had no idea how much to ask you for, what it was going, the number was going to be. And then we've had to also ask for opinions on some matters that became quite complicated, which have run up the costs. And also with the case, back to the caseload, the case analysis, we do have to often get patient charts. And so we need experts to read those charts. And so then we have to either get audiologists or speech-language pathologists from the Hill or someone that's a Spanish speaker or what have you to read those. So that's why we're asking for increased limitation also for the professional services so that we can get that expert help on the cases. So that's essentially my presentation, and thank you.
Thank you. Questions from Ms. Haig? Representative Wisner.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. And thank you for your report. Looks like you're trying to do the right thing here. When you are asking for a part-time investigator, did you consider requesting funding for contract? Your work is a lot like a lot of state agencies. You have ups and downs as far as investigator, and so sometimes you may need a full-time, not a part-time, during a certain workload, which seems easier to do with contract than it would be for a part-time. Otherwise, you have a backup of a workload backlog. So did you consider that?
Co-Chair Monroe and Smith Warner and Representative Wisnant, yes, absolutely. We still need to have that limitation that we currently have for professional services because we do need to supplement. And actually, I'm in the process, hopefully this week, of hiring another contractor to help get through this, 60 or so cases that are still sitting on my plate here to get us caught up. And we will continue to use the current investigator that we have. He's fantastic, but he's also working for ODE, the chiropractic board, and a number of other boards, and so it's hard to pin him down, I really need that consistency on a weekly basis where someone is bird-dogging these cases and helping to triage them to other people or to whomever it makes sense.
Thank you for that.
John?
Chairman Rowe, members of the committee, just to make sure I clarify that the board is providing this report today based on the budget note. The other funds limitation request and position authority isn't included. This is just the report. That request is currently under consideration. So what you're doing today essentially is the State Fiscal Office recommendation is acknowledging receipt of the report.
Madam Co-Chair.
Mr. Chair, I move that this committee accept the LFO recommendation of acknowledging receipt of this report.
There's a discussion on the motion. Any objections to the motion? Okay, motion's adopted. Does that complete our work?
It does.
We need a carrier. Okay. You want it? No,
sure.
Co-chair will carry it. She needs more work to do.
Exactly.
Anything else to come before this committee? Okay, during this short session, we're planning to meet Tuesdays and Thursdays as we did this week. So plan that in your schedule. See you all next Tuesday at 8:30.
And I was just going to point out that if you look online, we do have listed the agendas for the next couple meetings, and on Tuesday it'll be we'll discuss the Office of Child Care situation and there's that
child
needs,
care on Tuesday,
etc.
So. Okay. Thank you very much. We're adjourned.
We had a briefing in short.